And we're going to be having a hearing on House Bill 2444 first, and we're expecting a telephonic testimony.
Hi, Karen. This is Heidi Moe. I'm from the House Judiciary Committee calling for Judge Pratt.
All right. Come on.
Thank you.
Is that Judge Pratt?
Yes.
Hello.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Heidi Moad. I am the Judiciary Committee Counsel for the House. You are on the record, and we are opening a public hearing on House Bill 2444. If you could start by identifying yourself for the record and spelling your first and last names, we'd appreciate that.
My name is the initial J, Burdette, B-U-R-D-E-T-T-E, last name Pratt, P-R-A-T-T. I'm the presiding judge in Mount Hood County. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to appear before this committee to support House Bill 2444 by telephone. As many of you know, we're so far away from Salem over here that we're in a different time zone. The purpose of this bill is to address a gap in the system that currently exists to supervise or monitor people who are placed on bench probations. Most trial courts have two types of cases that are placed on probation. We have felony cases, we have misdemeanor cases. Most felons who are granted probation are placed on a supervised probation to community corrections. As part of that obligation, they pay a monthly fee for the supervision. That fee varies. I know in Mount Hood County, it can vary from $10 to $35 per month. However, community correction systems are not funded to supervise misdemeanor cases. Now, some community corrections offices do not accept any misdemeanor cases. Others will accept certain misdemeanor cases, particularly those that relate to community safety issues, such as misdemeanor sex cases, domestic violence cases, or driving under the influence cases. The rest of the misdemeanor cases are left to the court to deal with. These are often property crimes, such as misdemeanor theft, misdemeanor criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, misdemeanor forgery cases, and others. And these tend to be, although they're not as serious as the felony cases, there tends to be large numbers of them. What has occurred for many years in the trial court system is that the courts have placed these folks on bench probation. Conditions are imposed such as drug and alcohol treatment, community service, restitution, payment of other financial obligations. And because they are not being formally supervised by community corrections, somebody in the court staff has to monitor these cases. They have to check back to find out if they're complying with their probation, if the restitution has been paid, and so forth. This has to be done before the period of probation expires. Then if they're not in compliance, there has to be a motion to show cause generated so that person can be brought in and dealt with. If nothing is done, if the court doesn't do that, these folks would simply skate through the system, their probation would expire, nothing would happen, they would not be held accountable. In our small court here in Mount Hood County, we have, at times, we have had as many as 900 people on bench probation at a particular time. Currently, we have 326 cases on bench probation. Now, the trial courts are not funded to handle these cases. When the judicial department and the legislature calculates the funding for trial courts, there's nothing allocated for supervising bench probations. And as a result, we, in essence, have to assign this function to somebody on our court staff. Some judges use their judicial assistants to do it. Others use other court staff. The purpose of this bill, first of all, there are some folks in the judicial department who do not believe that courts have the authority to impose bench probation. So one purpose of this bill is to clarify that the courts do, in fact, have the authority to do what, in essence, they've been doing for many years out of necessity. The other purpose of House Bill 2444 is to allow the courts to impose a fee for this function and collect that. That money would go into an account and then would be used to help fund the staff positions that are used and needed to monitor these cases. In some cases, or some of the courts, these cases are thousands and thousands of cases. I would suggest one change to the current language in House Bill 2444. As it is currently written, Section 1, Paragraph 2 provides for a monthly supervision fee. My concern is that providing for a monthly supervision fee, it would be a small fee. It would really generate more work for the court and to keep track of and collect a monthly fee. My suggestion would be that this be changed to a one-time fee, such as $50 or $75, that could be imposed. It could be imposed in the money judgment at the time of sentencing and could be collected along with the other financial obligations imposed. It doesn't make sense to be keeping track of monthly fees of small amounts coming in. I think it would just create more work than it would justify. Those are my comments. Do any of the committee members have any questions?
Committee members, any questions? Okay, Representative McPherson.
Judge, this is Representative Greg McPherson. How does this compare to the what happens to offenders who are on probation from felonies or who are under community corrections supervision? Do they have a fee? Is it charged monthly? How does it compare in amount to the amounts you contemplate here?
They do pay a monthly fee. As I said, and it varies somewhat from county to county. In Malheur County, it depends upon the level of supervision. In Malheur County, the standard supervision fee is $35 per month. And if they're placed on Case Bank, which is a lower level of supervision, I believe it's $10 per month. And that's why I suggested a flat fee of $50 to $75. People who are placed on probation, on bench probation, are usually placed on probation from 12 to 18 months. So that would be still be significantly less than what is being charged for supervised probation.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, please.
Judge, the what is the consequence if the fee were not paid? That is there would be creating a situation where, for failure to pay this supervision fee, a person's probation would be revoked or wouldn't be extended to them, and then what would happen with them? Is there a prospect that by applying this fee, we would have some people who don't pay winding up then being incarcerated for their failure to pay?
Well, that would be the ultimate sanction, and that's why I suggest that it simply be a flat fee that could be imposed, could be added to the money judgment that is imposed at the time of sentencing. Currently, if a person does not pay their court-ordered financial obligations, and that includes restitution, fines, the unitary assessment, attorney fees, and other assessments, if they don't pay them, then we bring them back into court. We generally will give them additional time. We may impose a sanction such as some work crew or something if they're simply not complying. But if we ultimately get down to the end and they simply fail to pay or refuse to pay, then the ultimate sanction would be a revocation of their probation and incarceration. But that would have to be after a showing that they had the ability to pay and did not pay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Mowat.
And, Your Honor, in reviewing Section 1, it does appear that it would be discretionary as far as the court may impose the fee. I assume the court, if there were an appropriate showing of indigence, would be able to suspend some or all of that fee.
Yes.
Any further questions from the committee? Okay, thank you, Judge. We appreciate your testimony, and then we'll go ahead and go on to live testimony.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Goodbye now.
All right. Okay, we have three people signed up, Brad Swank, Pat Schreiner, and Paul Snyder. And just please go ahead and start it.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Swank, Special Counsel for Government Relations for the Oregon Judicial Department. House Bill 2444 is a bill that the Oregon Judicial Department takes no position on the substance of the bill, but we do recommend some technical changes to the bill to make it easier to implement and administer if it passes. The purpose of the bill, as Judge Pratt explained, is to allow a judge to place probationer convicted of a misdemeanor under supervision of the court, and allows the judge to order the probationer to pay a fee to offset the court costs of supervision. The bill is permissive, and the fee amount is blank in the bill. The measure was introduced by Representative Butler. Many courts already monitor defendants who are sentenced to probation for certain types of misdemeanor cases. If the defendant is not placed on county supervised supervision, this kind of judicial direct monitoring is called bench probation, as Judge Pratt said. In 1999, we did a survey. We found that of the 33 counties that responded, 82% had some kind of bench probation going on for misdemeanors in some instances, other kinds of offenses, lower offenses like violations and those sorts of things. It's not the preferred system, as Judge Pratch mentioned. It's a system that arises because the county and state supervision for probationers has inadequate funds. Representative Butler allowed us to have some amendments drafted. We've drafted those, one of them, and attached the testimony that I've handed out is a hand-engrossed copy of the amendments and the amendments themselves as they come from Legislative Counsel's office. They address a couple of things. First of all, they delete the monthly fee, as Judge Pratt mentioned, for the reasons that he mentioned. And secondly, they put the money into an existing account rather than creating a new account to put it into, and it's an existing account that has uses. While we don't take any position on the substance of the bill, if you're going to pass it, we recommend that you adopt these amendments to make it easier to administer. And I can answer any questions you've got, but I know Judge Pratt answered a lot of them for you.
Okay, great. Any questions? Thank you.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, my name is Pat Schreiner. I'm with the Marion County Sheriff's Office Parole and Probation Division, and I'm representing the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors. We also do not have major substantive issues with the bill. We do appreciate the opportunity to talk to Judge Pratt and the fact that both Judge Pratt and Representative Butler are both open to some amendments and modifications to this bill, which is what we would also recommend. We understand that the purpose is to seek a one-time fee to help offset the costs for the courts on bench probation. That was one of the recommendations that we're making, that in Section 1 that we insert in there that it be misdemeanor bench probation rather than just misdemeanor to probation. So it would be a defendant convicted of a misdemeanor to probation. We would recommend it be a misdemeanor, a defendant convicted of a misdemeanor to bench probation. And that would clarify one of our issues. We would also insert the word monitor instead of supervision, just to provide better clarity. What the court is looking to do is monitor these people, not develop an alternative source of supervision, which is what community corrections does. And I think that other than that, we would just like to maybe stay involved with this bill to make sure it doesn't turn into a kind of an alternative of source of supervising offenders. But we completely understand where Judge Pratt and Representative Barker are coming from in proposing this. Any questions?
Questions from the panel? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the subcommittee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and we have not taken a position either with respect to House Bill 2444, but have shared the concerns that the community corrections directors have. I think when those concerns are addressed by the language proposed, I think it would be a fine bill, and it would actually fill a gap that needs to be filled right now in terms of monitoring what offenders do after they've been sentenced to bench probation.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Snyder.
Yeah, I'll get Mr. Schreiner's business.
Okay. What I'm going to do is we won't move to a work session on this bill today, and Ms. Mollard will get together and we'll get the modifications, bring it back. We already have the one handwritten dash one conceptual amendments, but we'll try to get it straightened out. Okay, we'll open the hearing on House Bill 2136, revises provisions related to the Oregon militia. Morning, Colonel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Military Department. With me today is Colonel Rudy Murgo, Judge Advocate General Corps of the Oregon National Guard, and Major Mark Ronning. House Bill 2136 was introduced on our behalf by the Governor, and under Oregon Revised Statutes ORS 398, the Oregon Guard has a body of law that regulates how we adjudicate military law in the state of Oregon while we're in a state status under the control of the governor. This body of law deals specifically with military justice that normally would be associated with the Uniform Code of Military Justice if we were called to federal active duty under the United States Code Title 10. This federal statute cannot apply to acts or offenses committed while in the state status or under federal Title 32 of the United States Code. In an effort to maintain consistency with the Federal Uniform Code of Military Justice, we have found it necessary to update our state code. This bill does that updating. There are key components of the bill. Clarifies the term confining authority, clarifies who may convene a court-martial, allows the Adjutant General to call a general court-martial in the Oregon Guard. Current law only allows for the governor to do that. Requires the state judge advocate to be in good standing with the state bar for appointment. Requires the state judge advocate to meet the qualifications for judge advocates under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Clarifies confinement standards. Allows for confinement in a county jail for no cost to the National Guard. Clarifies pay forfeiture and confinement punishment defined as active duty days or drill days. Clarifies active duty pay versus drill pay for purpose of punishments. Increase of monetary fine for general court-martial from $500 to $500 from $200. Increases of monetary fine for special court-martials to $250 from $200. Increases the number of days of confinement for special court-martials from 100 days to up to 365 days. Details punishments allowed under the summary court-martial. Provides for the governor the ability to commute or pardon for all punishments imposed by the entire chapter and rules of the process for a pardon or commission. Allows the Adjutant General to promulgate regulation to detail a military judge. Current law requires that the governor do so. Increases the fine for refusal to appear or testify from $500 to $2,500. Relates contempt charges in ORS 33.015, same as civilian courts, and allows confinement in a county jail at no cost to the Oregon Guard. Allows a military judge to release a person confined for contempt. deletes reference to certain drugs by name and allows punishment for use, manufacturing, distribution, or introduction of a controlled substance, makes the unauthorized wear of an official uniform punishable by a Class B misdemeanor, allows the Oregon Guard to use statewide and nationwide criminal records checks for new recruits, LEDs and NCIC, establishes a court of appeals in the Oregon National Guard and sets rules for the same, requires any felony charges to be presented to appropriate prosecuting civilian authority, and allow 90 days for the civilian authority to act before a military court can take jurisdiction. Clarifies the military department's ability to make regulations within statutes for general operations and the youth challenge program. Clarifies the adjutant general may make regulations for holding an arraignment. And clarifies that for a case ordered for review by a state judge advocate, that no less than three commissioned officers must be on the board of review. It requires the adjutant general to specify when regulations become operative. This bill changes a good deal to current military law in our current statutes, but the majority of the changes deal primarily with giving the adjutant general, or the most significant part of it, giving the adjutant general the ability to call court-martials, not requiring the governor to be the sole authority. Also, it clarifies many part of the current law and provides for punishment for someone wearing a military uniform. Finally, it clarifies that the time-honored ability of the military to make regulation that govern our actions and behavior. This is currently in the Oregon revised statute, but legislative council believed it needed to be retermed and reworded to make it more solid. That concludes my testimony on the bill. However, I would like to offer some amendments that we've had one hearing on this bill in the Vets Committee, and I'll give those to your counsel or to your secretary. But on proposed amendments, did you want me to go through them, Mr. Chairman?
If you could, just give us a brief rundown.
On page 3, line 5, we'd strike the words "a judge advocate." On page 3, line 31, after the word officer, strike all of the line. On page 3, line 31, after the word officer, insert "designated by the adjutant general." On page 3, line 32, strike all of the line 32. Page 8, line 3, after the word "in," insert "excess of." And then in the following, strike active duty base from the following places in the bill.
Okay.
Page 9, line 4, page 9, line 5, page 9, line 6, page 9, line 22, page 9, line 36, page 10, line 13, page 19, line 33, after the word "of," page 19, line 33, after the words "apply to," and page 19, line 35, after the word "any." Those are technical changes, cleaning the bill up. And I brought along with me today two judge advocates, and I thought probably if we had some very detailed questions about the whole genre of this bill, then these gentlemen would probably be a lot better to answer this than I, since they're both lawyers.
Okay, thank you. On the lodging of people in the county jails without any cost to the guard, is that... I'm surprised the counties, or maybe they are here to...
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, currently we have the ability to do that.
Okay.
So this is stating it more succinctly and not so diffused. And we want to make it clear to everybody that is in existence. So it's more clarification than something new.
I was wondering the background of about the uniform, wearing of the uniform. What problem has come up that's attracted that, or is?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's not a big issue. However, you probably read recently in a local news account of a new recruit who had I don't know where he got his uniform. He may have got it at one of the two, supply stores or something, and he showed up in front of an Oregon State policeman to talk about a criminal activity in full uniform. He'd never been to basic training, he'd never been to anything, but he had a full regalia on. The law right now is very, I guess, weak and almost non-existent with respect to impersonating a person in a military uniform. There's another bill that's in this legislative session that talks more specifically about that, and other peace officers and public public office holders, people impersonating those public office holders. This goes along with that same thought. However, this is in our, if we put this in our portion of the statute, then it allows the Oregon National Guard to then cite somebody and punish them under these statutory languages as well as other statutes that may exist or may get through the legislature.
But this would just apply to this particular one, or just apply to Guard members?
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Ms. Bullock.
Unless another member has it. In just my experience, I'm a little concerned about the language in creating the crime, and I would be curious to know what you think of it. Would you object, I guess, to an amendment that would add an intent to defraud component? I'm concerned that the way the law reads now, a child dressed up on Halloween in a uniform could be prosecuted. I mean, I know realistically they probably would not be, but I think it right now, as it reads, is potentially overbroad, particularly under sort of some Oregon constitutional standards, and would potentially be struck down without adding an intent component.
Ma'am, my name is Major Mark Ronning. I'm the full-time judge advocate for the Oregon Military Department. I don't have the number, but the Senate bill is going through that adds an additional offense of, I think it has impersonating a peace officer, a public officer. It also adds a felony for wearing a military uniform with intent.
Okay.
This does not have intent, but it does require that it is an official military uniform. So someone who buys a pair of BDUs at the local surplus store and wears it, that's not an official uniform. An official uniform would be something that I am wearing, something you're dressing up with for Halloween. A kid's not going to wear it. Somebody that's a U of O wearing just the BDUs, that's not it. It has to have the patches, the name, the unit crests.
If I could follow up.
You may remember this applies only to members of the Guard. It doesn't apply to the public.
No, I don't think so. It's just a person.
Okay.
The military, if I may, does not have jurisdiction over civilians. So if a civilian is acting in this capacity, we do not have jurisdiction to prosecute a civilian.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair,
yeah,
I just throw this out to the panel. Generally, as a general matter, when we are creating new crimes, then we see a fiscal impact, and particularly crimes that involve incarceration. And so I'm just wondering why we have a no fiscal impact note here on our measure summary when we see that at least in this one instance there's a new crime that's being created that appears that it could involve incarceration.
This, Mr. Chairman, Representative Pearson, this reference to the uniform?
Right. Yes, I know there may be other provisions of the bill that would have some fiscal impact as well, so I was just curious about this, a broader issue, but thinking about that in particular, whenever we're creating a new offense that involves incarceration. And I see there's according to the summary at the top of the bill, it says punishes by a maximum of 6 months imprisonment or $2,500 fine.
I think probably the appropriate response would be that currently there is, currently in the statutory language, violations do have certain punishments associated with them. What we're doing here is saying that the person who violates this section commits a Class B misdemeanor, which can be punishable by incarceration. So indeed, I guess you could say that is potential, that there would be a possibility of incarceration in a county jail. In that you could still be incarcerated under this statutory language as it exists today. And I think it's nominal, if at all, that you would increase or see an increase in incarcerations. In my 34 years in the Oregon National Guard, I can think of only a couple of instances where people were actually incarcerated for violation of the current Oregon Code of Military Justice. Most of those were less than 24 hours, and they were usually designed for impacts to grab somebody who needed a wake-up call, and usually the county sheriff was willing to incarcerate them overnight on like a Saturday morning, and then Sunday they were released back to their unit. And then the charges were then, I can't recall, and maybe one of these two judge advocates can tell you whether or not we've ever had a court-martial that actually incarcerated somebody. Do you know of any?
Not for a long time, sir.
Yeah, I can't.
Not during my career since 97.
So I think the reality is indeed that that is there, but the reality is it's very, very seldom ever used. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's kind of the history in the current operation.
Follow up, please.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Recognizing that this is it's a very troublesome as a sort of a what would I say a symbolic act when people misuse the uniform. And I understand the sensitivity of that. We have a situation where we're trying to be very sensitive about fiscal impacts, and I'm wondering whether in making the changes that are already proposed to the bill, whether something that would establish the penalty element here for this offense so that it would never involve incarceration, so it would always be a financial penalty, would that meet the needs of the people in the service?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McPherson, I'm sure it would. Again, it's a fairly rare occurrence, but I think as we look at today's environment that we're living in, and this young gentleman who decided to try to deceive this Oregon State police officer, unfortunately, the Oregon State police officer was a member of the Oregon National Guard, and so he and he had just returned from Iraq after a year in Iraq, yeah. So he was quite sensitive to the fact that this young man showed up on his watch with all regalia and full regalia, and attempting to deceive him as some sort of an official expert on Oregon Guard matters when this particular police officer knew better full well that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. Would that have been a valuable lesson to everybody to incarcerate him? Perhaps. I think the message was sent clear that when he cited him, and he did cite him, perhaps that was adequate, and then let the court decide. I think ultimately you folks deal with the criminal activities or the laws that deal with criminal activities every single day, and I suspect many of the people that testify before you and in your own lives, you probably see this far more than we do. I don't know whether the impact is worthy or not. I think that's ultimately left up to a judge who adjudicates these matters. So in some sense, it's good to have it there for that judge to give that judge that opportunity. On the other hand, the reality of it being used a lot is probably really, really slim.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to maybe just a more comment or question. The nature of this kind of service is such that matters of honor are extremely important, and my sense is that probably just being challenged, this being cited for it, has probably greater impact than any other sanction one could impose. I'm reminded of a very high-level official in the Navy who I believe took his own life because his right to wear certain battle ribbons was being challenged. And so I think focusing on distinctions of honor, I think will probably have the impact we're looking at far greater than issues of what exactly the criminal sanction is. And so it may be that we can accomplish the purpose without necessarily needing to go to an incarceration kind of sanction.
I just have a point of clarification, and this may be where we're getting unnecessarily sidetracked. Could a local prosecuting authority, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, prosecute someone under a violation of 399.155, or can only the military prosecute someone under that chapter?
If I may, Major Ronning, a full-time JAG officer, I had a conversation with an assistant Multnomah County DA with regard to this soldier that appeared in Portland Police. They have no ability to prosecute under anything right now, nor do we. There's a Senate bill that allows for the element of intent, and this one does not have the element of intent. The Senate bill is for a felony, and this one's for a misdemeanor. In today's environment, we're in a little bit of a different situation now than we have been in the past. If you look at the laws of international armed conflict and look at the situations we have overseas with the combat hostilities, there's significant international laws with regard to the proper wear of a uniform. and that is to safeguard civilians who are innocent from becoming targets of military actions. Personally, and as an organization, we're concerned about the dangers that civilians may be exposed to if, let's say, in a heightened level of security here in the United States, somebody is wearing a military uniform in an area where they shouldn't be wearing a military uniform. If we have concerns about people infiltrating secured areas and there's credible threats of terrorist activities, civilians should not be wearing military uniforms and approaching military installations, if for no other reason out of concern for their own safety and for what may happen.
So, but so if we were to, if this bill were to pass in its current form, the Multnomah County DA's office still would not prosecute under this 399, Oregon Revised Statute 399 point, I can't remember the point. It would instead prosecute under the intent to defraud Senate bill. Is that correct? Am I understanding that correctly? This is simply a military enforcement chapter versus a criminal code violation, or could a DA prosecute under this chapter?
This is not being placed in the criminal code.
Right.
I don't know. I don't practice criminal law on the civilian side. I don't know whether the criminal prosecuting attorney would be able to come in and utilize this or not.
Okay.
I do know that the military does not have authority to prosecute civilians.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ma'am?
Yes.
Okay. Chair, probably yes. It's not in the criminal code, but if the district attorney wanted to, I mean, there are throughout the statutory codes, there's crimes all over. DUIs, for example, aren't in the criminal code. Game cases aren't in the criminal code. So, yes, on the other hand, take a mere tweak of the pen to change it to only the military. On the other hand, as Major Groning pointed out, there's some very good reasons as a public policy matter that you as Oregonians may not want people sneaking up to courthouses or this very legislative assembly dressed like me and assuming that I'm defending you when I'm attacking you. So you may want to have that language as it states right now.
State your name.
I'm sorry, my name's Lieutenant Colonel Murgo, M-U-R-G-O.
But if I'm understanding correctly, this is really for you to take care of your internal stuff, and not so the other bill is going to deal with some civilian putting on a uniform.
Mr. Chairman, as the National Guard, we can only prosecute
right.
people in the National Guard. We don't have any authority over civilians. It would have to go,
right.
for example, to the local district attorney here.
Okay. And one other question I had there is, and I may have missed the point, there's something about after 90 days, the military would take charge. Was that a hard and fast rule? I mean, if something happened in Marion County and the district attorney was investigating and went past 90 days, would it automatically shift to you? Or
that's the section 34, starting at the bottom of page 17.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the intent here, I think, is that the civilian authority is the, in certain issues, the civilian authority is the proper place to prosecute Oregon Guardsmen, regardless of our statutory allowance. I think what this is intended to do is to give that district attorney ample time to make a decision
okay.
as to whether or not they want to prosecute some activity that may occur, say, for instance, at Camp Riley on a state-owned training base or at an armory or some other training activity or... And that's really the intent, if I'm not mistaken. You agree?
Sir, I completely agree. What we've done here is to essentially say that although we will have authority to prosecute under military justice, Class A offenses are going to be first and foremost handed over to civilian authorities for their discretionary prosecution.
And okay, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Lieutenant Colonel Murgo again, we've had actual cases where we've waited and we haven't been able to take disciplinary action, and we would have throughout the state. And this way we can, if the district attorney doesn't want to, that's fine, we'll take over. They want to, we don't want to be anywhere near that. But what we don't want to have is a gap where nothing happens to one of our soldiers who commits a crime.
Okay. Any further questions? Well, We won't go to work session this one either, Colonel, and I'll have you work with Ms. Mollard and try and get the amendments. And I think your testimony helped clarify some of the questions people had about that. Close the public hearing.
Great. Thank you very much.
Is there any further business today?
I don't see.
Okay, we'll join the Judiciary Committee. 9:00